Well, happy birthday to the United States Marine Corps as of this Sunday, 238th birthday. And tomorrow is Veterans Day, so remember those who serve. You got me? All right. When we come back, we have Dr. Paul Mahler and Chief Test Pilot Ed Dorais. And we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. It's techie stuff. It's airplane stuff. It's magic. It's invention. It's the future. And you forget about stuff like the glowing island across the seas. Bless their hearts over there. I wish there was something that could be done on that situation. We covered that last night in depth, or in as much depth as we could without, you know, deciding to hold hands and jump off the Hollywood sign together. But anyway, we'll keep you posted on that stuff. And I want to talk about the Wankel engine, the Wankel engine. The last one was built on Friday, June 22nd, 2012. I think it was the number 16 was the version of the last one. And they say that it never really, I mean, it was so revolutionary in design, but it was too beautiful for engineers to ignore. Far fewer parts than a regular reciprocating piston engine. And Mazda kept with it for a long time, but as many things that show so much promise, it went away last year. Or at least that's what it says on this page that I've been reading. So I'll read some more pages, and if there's a correction to be made, trust me, I'll make it. Don't want you ratting me out. You know what I mean? All right. We'll be right back. Take a quick little break. Go get yourself another cup of tea and return quickly. This is Coast to Coast AM. Gentlemen, you know, back in the days when, well, I like to say when dinosaurs roamed the earth, everybody was trying to, first there were just carburetors, and then came mechanical fuel injection. I think Borg Warner made a mechanical fuel injection. And then, I thought back then, wouldn't it be wonderful? In fact, I'll go ahead and make the prediction that I think they're going to go to turbochargers first, and eventually, they're going to go back to superchargers. All these guys are running around in their cars with these big GMC blowers sticking out of their hoods. Anyway, they were, you know, awesome to look at, although it limited your visibility quite a bit. Do you find that, with some exceptions, of course, that what we've really done over the last several decades, really about four of them, is refine, make smaller and more powerful just about everything we have that has anything to do with propulsion, particularly engines, and on the military side of things, explosives and propellants? I mean, have we made any quantum leaps? Because I'm looking at Nitro Turbodyne here, and creator of the cold turbine that flash expands liquid nitrogen, provide power for turning electrical generators, pumps, or flywheels, and so forth. And I'm just wondering, I mean, has there been a quantum leap in those devices which propel metal boxes, whether they have wings or whether they have wheels on the ground, or in the case of the sky car, both? Or are we on the verge of another quantum leap in the type of power plants that we'll be using? Or did you take a step in the evolution?
I that's actually a really good question. That was something that, and I do get asked that quite a bit, specifically about that little turbine. It, as you mentioned, it flash expands liquid nitrogen and basically accelerates the air, and then it drives pumps and you know, turbines and things like that, or I should say windmills, really. But it was a technology that I actually demonstrated back in the early 80s. But at that time, it was made out of aluminum, and everything was fairly heavy, and in comparison, a very kind of a high mass. You had this aluminum wheel that was spinning at a high RPM, and you know, it took energy to keep that going. Years later, it was kind of amazing, because when I was about 20 years ago, I guess, when I first met Dr. Mahler, and we were having a conversation, I brought this up. He was one of the few people that really understood the basically the physics behind it, and I was kind of impressed, because I hadn't really run into too many people that really understood it. But he understood that, and a lot of it had to do in a very similar situation. We call it the low disc loading or high disc loading, excuse me. But anyways, it was a problem in disc loading. To make a long story short, I don't mean to get too Larry Lightbulb on you, but to make a long story short here, the way that it really it has really come into its own over the last few years with the introduction of composites, as you were saying, things like carbon fiber and Kevlar and to be able to reduce the mass from aluminum. And so we use those materials, and we're able to use the bearing technology has actually gotten a lot better. So we use bearings that have extremely long life. So look, that little turbine can run for 70,000 hours uninterrupted. That's what we calculate the life to be. We've never actually run one that long because that's literally many, many years to get to that point. So, but we've never had one fail in practice. So the technology has actually caught up to the point to where it did become very practical. It made it more, it grew into the technology that's here. I should say the technology really allowed it to happen. So it was a combination of factors. I think that's something, too, if you look at, for example, the Skycar, the introduction of materials like carbon fiber and Kevlar and, the composite and, all those technologies, as Dr. Ma was saying, you have a hummingbird that's very, very light, and it has a lot of power, and this is a prime example. I think obviously it would be almost the power needed to lift something that would be made out of steel or, for that matter, even made out of aluminum is daunting. The technology is there to make a very light, very strong, but very light vehicle. One point I wanted to make was that this last week I was in Davis. I'm actually in Los Angeles right now, but I was in Davis, and there were a lot of news crews and people like that coming in and out and doing interviews, and they would want us to walk to pull the aircraft out into the back area where Dr. Mueller has kind of a little pad in that area. And so they were so amazed because Dr. Mueller just basically walked up and started moving it on his own. And everybody was looking at him like, oh, my gosh, this guy's Superman. And I always say, yeah, he is very strong. But then again, too, the aircraft is very light. It's made to be very light. And you know, it just shows you how, that technology, it's lighter than a car, yet the horsepower that's packed into that air vehicle is, in some cases, 10 times what you would find in a car.
Say, what kind of speed are we going to get out of the Skycar? Well, once you go, look, this is it. This is as far as we're going to take this particular design.
You can get, you can approach 400 miles an hour, but you're going to be burning fuel very, very dramatically, whereas you can only fly as much as 5 hours. You all of a sudden would only be able to fly about an hour at that speed. But if you fly at about 300 miles an hour at 25,000 feet or 200 miles an hour at sea level, then you get decent mileage. You get the miles per gallon. I talked about 100 passenger miles per gallon. So it's a matter of what altitude you choose to go. If you're going a short distance, you probably not go higher than 5,000 feet. But if you're going from, say, San Francisco to L.A., you probably go to 25,000. Or 18, case Ed said that would probably be a good number because we get good performance at 18,000 as well.
Now, I don't mean to be slow here, but this is a turbine-driven prop, yes?
No, it's a Wankel-driven prop.
It's a Wankel-driven prop, so it is internal combustion.
As I said earlier, we acquired all of the rotary engine technology that's been developed in North America pretty much, and then we spent a great deal of time and money bringing it to the level it's at right now. But the Wankel engine is the perfect engine for things like boats, airplanes, hybrid cars, gen sets, something that needs to run at a fairly constant speed at a high power. It's not a particularly good engine as a prime mover like Wankel, like Mazda tried to make it, and that's probably the reason it didn't work well. It's not designed to sit around at low speed and put out high torque.
I see you. I see what you're talking about. Well, I confused the, I got caught up in the nitro turbodyne. When I think turbo, I think turbine, and then there, down the hill we go.
But it's not, it's got nothing to do with the Skycar.
Yeah, no, that's not part of the Skycar. It's, the turbine that you see for nitro turbodyne, it's strictly for, at this point, at the about the highest power output that we're at target market is about 26 kilowatts, and it's really used mainly in oil fields. But the SkyCar, actually, those the engines are Wankel rotaries turning, literally they're ducted fans. I think one of the things that I actually flew one several years ago. It was a Mazda Wankel rotary engine inside of a Zenith aircraft, and it was it had that same slim line. It was a little bit faster than the standard experimental Zenith in that it had a little bit more slim nose, and it was water cooled, but it was a little bit thinner in the nose because it was very. It resembled a turbine, and indeed they're becoming more and more popular. You see them more and more in experimental aircraft for that reason. You can put them in a fairly tight.
They convert a Mazda engine to aircraft usage, and there's a number of companies in America that do that, but we could never use the Mazda type rotary. We'd never get off the ground.
$4
per pound. Whereas, as I said earlier, so we're around six times as much power for the same weight as a Mazda.
Well, if you're able to squeeze that much power, but you get that kind of a power to weight ratio. So I'm guessing that it may have crossed your mind that, you know, we could really scare the heck out of a bunch of people and delight them at the same time if we made this thing in a saucer shape and put a big fan down at the bottom. Did you ever think about the old circular craft?
Well, you must have seen on our website the Jetson vehicle that we built, which we've been accused of many UFO sightings. But it looks just like a Jetson, and it does just what you just said. It is saucer-shaped, and I sit in the middle of it, and, of course, that's the vehicle I've flown many times. But the technology involved in that is similar in so many ways to the SkyCar. It uses the rotary engines. It uses ducted fans. It uses our stability system. The only downside, it is not designed to go fast. It's 100-mile-an-hour kind of aircraft, top speed, and it burns good deal more fuel because it's not so aerodynamic as the SkyCar.
So it was you.
It was me.
Now that's fun.
The rotary engine was a wonderful invention, and you know, God bless Felix Wankel. I owe him a great debt of gratitude. Without Felix, I would not have a flying car.
All right, let's have a little change of pace here. Let's take a call. First time caller, Rosemary in Connecticut.
Hi. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Rosemary.
It's your loyal support team from Connecticut, Jim and Rosemary and team. We're so delighted to have you on, and you're doing such a great job explaining it. I personally want to tell the audience that the crowdfunding is going to be really something. You know, we're talking about people like ourselves that are not wealthy to become a part of this for, say, $50 and be recorded into it and be on the, you know, an insider in the Mahler invention, something that in most of our lifetimes is probably the most revolutionary thing that would happen. So I just want to encourage people because I feel it's such a privilege that if many people get involved with this for a small amount of money, it's going to be something that's going to just take off. Excuse the pun.
Thank you.
I just want to compliment you.
We're excited about the fact that so many of the people that support us have a chance to really be recorded as part of our history, and we intend to make everybody who participates with us in what we call our flight team, have them go down in the records as really a part of the group that launched this thing, that finally made it happen, that brought it together in that first historic flight. So,
yeah, I mean, can you imagine that for possibly as little as $50 one time, coming from many people, would just give everyone such a feeling of belonging and having participated. What a real, honor to be able to participate in something like this. And
I think they're going to really like what they get in return. You know, if you go down the list, even someone who puts in $25 to contribute to this first flight are going to get 5 significant gifts, and it goes up to the point where one can actually get a flight in the sky car and fly in a new era because the new era is already flying.
Yeah.
Or if they're willing to
fly
in the sky.
We're really excited about it, the team here in Connecticut. We need a team in every state, but we're really excited about it. And the other thing I wanted to mention, the thought had come up at some point that these could be actually like rent-a-car, you know, that until many, many people own their own, it might be the kind of thing where you could rent one for a week.
No, you're absolutely right, Rosemary. Boeing did an extensive study, and they said the only place for this is a rental vehicle initially, because you can rent it, go someplace at 300-plus miles an hour, and the cost of the vehicle and produced in volume is going to be, again, a Boeing study establishes the price of a quality automobile. Of course, it's going to have significant numbers produced to make that happen, but if the price of a quality automobile, you're going to be able to rent it for that kind of dollars and go where you want without actually having to own it. We think that it's going to be the start.
Yeah, but now I'd like to hear you talk about how we can fly it. Can somebody like me fly it?
Well, yeah, as you know, there is no skill level involved. I'm the perfect example of that. I've been the test pilot so far without any pilot license or pilot training. You basically drive this vehicle from your home if you owned it, or you go to a vertiport, park your car, get in it, put in your destination, and then go to sleep, right, play computer games, read, do whatever. That highway in the sky is already underway. It's well advanced. I'm sure Ed can tell you about that as well.
Oh.
It's going to be the way you get from point A to point B without having any risk, and also very rapidly. It'll change the world and the way we get around.
Oh, this is so exciting. This is I am so glad. I hope we have the largest audience possible here.
No, we do.
Thanks for your support, Rosemary.
Oh,
thanks, Rosemary.
What a privilege, Paul. Thank you.
What a nice call.
It was.
We got a wonderful, wonderful group. I tell you, one of the biggest rewards in this whole process has been the enthusiasm and the belief. I mean, the fact that people truly believe there's a future in this form of transportation as we know it is. People like Ed and myself who are intimately involved in it know that it's always been an issue of money and how to get from one year to the other in a world which says, you know, where's my flying car, but doesn't really believe it's around the corner.
I'm very proud to say this. I actually did contribute as well to the campaign, and one of the reasons I did is simply because I know how close Dr. Mahler is to flying this. It's a very short distance away, and what he's been able to do with a fraction of the budget that a Boeing or a Lockheed or, for that matter, General Motors, what they have to spend on their projects. I mean, typically a Boeing or a Lockheed or, you know, anybody else at General Dynamics, they put in a little bit of their money, but they have a really, really rich uncle that gives them a lot more money. And, of course, that gets applied in various ways to create all sorts of things. And in reality, you look at Dr. Mahler's, what he's done literally with mostly his own money has really come a long way. I mean, when other aircraft, other flying car manufacturers have sprung up and gone away and, you know, folded, closed their doors and everything else, Dr. Mahler's still there plugging away on a daily basis trying to, you know, bring this to fruition. And, you know, it says a lot. It really does. It says a lot about his dedication. It says a lot about his technical ability. It says a lot about his...
It says a lot about a lot of good people that have supported me along the road, too, like yourself, Ed. So... It is difficult because it's dependent not just on one thing. It's dependent on people, but it's dependent on different technologies, as we talked about earlier. And I guess we're born at the right time because the technologies are there. They weren't there 20 years ago.
Excellent. Let's take a break and come right back. It's great to have you all tonight, Dr. Paul and Test Pilot Ed. Ain't it the truth? Can't keep my eyes from the circling sky. Tongue-tied and twisted, just an earthbound misfit eye. Not anymore. It's funny. Gary sent an email a minute ago and goes, great, a flying car that your audience can't afford. And then he says, people lightning to radio are broke. I relent that. We'll be right back with Dr. Paul Mahler and Ed DeReyes in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM Sunday Night Edition. You know, gentlemen, every once in a while I'll ask a really indiscreet question, and sometimes I get an indiscreet answer, so no matter what happens, we'll be good. Crowdfunding, and how do you fund a project like this? It must be into the millions. And if somebody did want to contribute through the crowdfunding, to which we have referred a couple times, how do they do this?
Well, they really go to our website, the easiest thing, because it leads you right to the whole program, Mahler.com. Real easy, Mahler.com. And it's true, the program has run into many, many millions of dollars. Much of it spent in engine development, a lot of the aircraft. But that's why we're actually proposing not to raise that much money in this end product, because we've flown this aircraft with a tether. We've flown it unmanned, the Skycar. We've flown the earlier aircraft with people on board. Now that we're really prepared to, after the FAA's approval, we're prepared to actually fly it untethered with a man on board. We're not talking about a big extension from what we've already done. If people go to our website, they'll see us flying. Me flying the Jetson-like vehicle, and you'll also see the Skycar flying. So we've been around for some time. We're just taking it to the next level. We're validating the ability to fly in a manner that we're so comfortable with that we can take the tether off. It's a big step for us, and we think there's a chance for those supporters over the years to support us in time at this time. And become part of history. We've actually been asked to place this vehicle in the Smithsonian Institute when we're finished with it, and anybody who participates in this will be part of that record that we will provide the Smithsonian when we provide the vehicle.
Excellent. That's just outstanding. Go ahead.
I think just basically a second what Dr. Mahler said. Nitro Turbodyne, the company that I work for, the consultant company, we are independent of Mahler International. We don't have anybody that's tied to Mahler International, but we remember taking this project to our board as part of the crowdfunding, and I said, look, we're all engineers, but we're all scientists as well, and this really is what we... what we crave, this is what we want, this is what we do for a living, and this is such an important event, not just for Nitro Turbodyne, but really for Mahler International and for the world in general. This is it's a big commitment on our part. We're giving almost $500,000 in kind engineering services, but it really is a chance for us to basically, as engineers and scientists, put our money where our mouth is, and the board did back me with a unanimously. There was never a question of, well, you know, what do we do, or, you know, we'll think about it. It was a unanimous decision, because again, everybody knew Dr. Mahler. Everybody knew his reputation, his track record, and his what he had done, how far he had come, and really, quite frankly, I think it was an easy decision. I don't think it was anything that anybody labored over. So the crowdfunding there, I was there. That was a brilliant idea on his part. I think when he explained to me what he wanted to do, it's kind of like the VA commercial where you smack your forehead and think, wow, that's a great idea. And it just ballooned from there. So yeah, the Indiegogo campaign, and when Dr. Mahler said, you know what, this is exactly what it was made for. It's I know he gets asked all the time, well, why don't you just sell stock? Well, he can't personally because he's a shareholder, but it's against SEC rules. But beyond that, Mahler International doesn't own any stock. Anytime somebody buys and sells stock on the stock exchange, that goes to the shareholder. Not a penny of it goes to Mahler. So it's not as though he can just say, oh, let's just sell a million shares. You know, that it just that you can't do that. So he's just like everybody else, just like where we were a few years ago in Nitro Turbodyne. Any high-tech company is out there literally knocking on doors trying to get funding to develop their, you know, what they have in the works and everything else. Crowdfunding really, and Dr. Mahler said this so perfectly, crowdfunding was made exactly for this type of situation. Indiegogo is perfect for that. And this brings the, you know, rather than ask for $1 million from two or three people, you know, it's we're now able to ask for a dollar from a million people through crowdfunding. You're not only spreading any perceived risk, but you're also able to bring a financial force that in many ways is greater than a lot of millionaires have the capability of bringing to bear on this, on the first flight of the Skycar. So it was a brilliant idea all the way around.
Amazing. It really is. This is something else. You know, I can't wait. Normally I don't look forward to, but in this case, I can't wait to go down to the DMV and buy tags for my Skycar. I can just hear it now. Ooh, you've got a Skycar? It's like, well, yes. Have you ever...
Especially if you drive it up to them at some point. We've always had this... We have to be very careful, for example, if we truck this down the highway to do a show or something, we have to be very careful to cover it because...
people be driving into stuff looking at it. That is so much fun. All right, so full autopilot, all of that stuff. I got a question for you. This is a little like out in left field, but you know, people worry about stuff like, I mean, depending on the level of the cataclysmic event. Oh yeah, that's right. It's cataclysmic. So what difference does it make what kind it is, right? Does anything, because everything is fly by wire pretty much, meaning it's electric computer controlled. Do you have to do extensive shielding to make sure, well, little pulses, little EM pulses and things don't get into it and cause computer trick?
That you do. It's very important because that is always a concern. But we do that. We have 8 separate computers, right, operating at the engines themselves, so there's no transmission issues with most of that. But they do go back to the central computer who does nothing but check. It's sort of the monitor, it's the grandmaster that's sitting back there looking at everything and making decisions if something doesn't match. If one computer is saying something different from the other three, it gets kicked out. This is a program called Quadruple Redundancy, and it's been in the fighter aircraft for years, and it's been extremely successful. So it's not new. It's certainly new to this commercial civilian type of technology as a product, but it's been around a long time, and it's proven very successful. But yes, we do have to shield the ignition systems, and really that's the only thing.
So you've got plan B, C, and D. That's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's also part of FAA certification now, especially in this scenario where you have multiple or quadruple redundancy. It's called HRF testing, and it's high-energy RF, or high-energy radiated frequencies. And actually, surprisingly, I do have – it's kind of ironic you would bring that up because I do have quite a bit of EMI and EMC testing experience as well as doing that type of testing experience for the Department of Defense. So – this is one of the things that I looked at over the last, you know, couple of years that we've been working on and talking with the FAA. We know for a fact they're going to ask, okay, so you have one computer that, you know, decides that it's in Poughkeepsie and you happen to be in Davis. What are you going to do? And, you know, what happens if you take a lightning strike or, you know, you fly over a 50,000-watt radio station? What's it going to do to that aircraft? So all these things are things that we... that have been accounted for, things that we're prepared for, and things that certainly will have to be demonstrated to the FAA to show that indeed we are safe. And for that matter, it's even in an engine out situation, Dr. Mahler has really gone the extra step in that if for some reason, it's literally a chances of a single engine failure are in the millions or about one in a million that it would happen. But for a second engine failure, it's actually in the tens of millions. So you, even in a situation where you have an engine failure, the other engine is able to take over automatically. It's all done by computer, and it's all done literally in picoseconds. It just takes no time at all for the computer to adjust to that and then take you to safety. You know, something that most modern general aviation aircraft don't even have on board yet.
Well, I want to add a couple of things to what Ed said. We also have parachutes on board, just in case of the ultimate, which we don't believe ever happens. Plus, this vehicle is not meant to sit around and hover. It's designed to take off and accelerate to 100 miles an hour in about 10 and a half seconds. So we're dragster-type acceleration rates because we have over 1,000 horsepower. So you only are exposed for something in the area of 10 seconds to any kind of failure. And during that period of time, one engine can fail, and you can still complete the transition to forward flight. If you're in forward flight and you're struck by lightning and you're up above 200 feet, then you would and the system was taken out, which would be unlikely. But remotely, if it were to happen, you still would have the parachutes as the ultimate solution, just like the Cirrus aircraft uses.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, it would be rude of me to invite people to come on board the bridge of the mothership and speak with you and then not let them do it. So let's take a call, shall we? Let's go to Skyline 1. George, are you still there?
Dr. Miller, or Paul Miller.
Yes, sir.
SDI, I'm 77, and I think you were either ahead of me or behind me, but you're pretty close.
We're very close.
Yeah, well, back before SDI, that's Reagan's period about motors, and I have in my files your original flying craft, bubble craft with you inside flying. I think it was 25,000 to buy it back in those days. But the SDI period coming forward, that is what is called a capacitor effect plasma shelled coke prime mover with ion propulsion, which anything's lighter. But there's one problem with that. You take that kind of a craft and try to land it in a community, it will short and blow out all the circuitry in time because of the dual circuitry that's going on it. But your concept here, looking forward, is what I might call a lift parachute for that. Because if your motors were on that particular type craft, when you would come into a populated area, see, when they powered down the capacitor effect that gives the lift, and et cetera, your motors then take over, and the craft now is brought down to a pulsing effect that will not blow out all the transformers in community. What I'm saying, if you could blend this with the capacitor effect craft that are flying since SDI, you could probably, your craft could be instrumental. Those poor people are going to Mars. They can't come back. This craft and that, at least according to a doctor that I was involved with, is could go 3.4 days to the moon, and it's definitely only a few weeks to Mars. But this craft, your computer thing, could be what I'll call a solid lift parachute for the capacitor effect, plasma effect, using Pope prime movers, ion propulsion ships. What do you think?
What do you think about that, Doctor?
Well, there's a lot of technologies that could be used at some point, but of course, you know, we have to deal with something that's got a history, a really strong history that's been around for quite a long time. Despite the fact that I'm talking about an unusual power plant giving 3 horsepower per pound, I'm still dealing with technology that's well proven. And while I appreciate some advanced versions of that, I don't want to start my lifetime over again and get into something that's beyond the proven history of technology. But I respect your suggestion that there are other ways to propel that might turn out to be very valuable in the future, but probably beyond my lifetime, quite frankly. Thank you.
Yeah, here we are. You know, I'm trying to get a flight with you out there, and he's got you going into space already.
Yes, I'm having my time. Hard enough time here on Earth.
George, you're all right. You're all right with us. All right, Sue, Skyline number 3. Sue, are you there?
Oh, Commander John, may I board the mothership? I'm from the home of the Wright brothers.
Hey, positively you may.
Dayton, Ohio here. Yeah, I have an interesting question. First and foremost, thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show. Okay, you've got a great fan over here. That's for sure. I wanted to know about the Sky Car itself, whether the design, how it differs from the Harrier propulsion mechanism, or even some of the drone. I would like that discussed. I'm not sure about this rotary thing, what he was talking about, how this differs. Also, how did he work out the liquid fuel tank as far as the positioning of it and how the stabilizers actually can stabilize the jostling of the fuel back and forth, because that's quite heavy with that, with the load you're going to be taking. And okay, last question, what kind of insurance would we have to insure such a vehicle?
Golly,
that's a load of questions.
Are you a pilot, sir?
Let's see, which one is the most important one you want to answer?
The Sea Harrier one.
Sorry.
The Harrier setup.
That's a good question, actually. The Harrier is a turbine-powered engine, and there's my professor at college always said you can fly a brick if you want to put enough power into it. And it's true. The Harrier uses a turbine engine. It delivers a huge amount of thrust. And why wouldn't we be using that? Because it costs a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
The key element that we have entered into with our engine is to produce an engine that we know that the average person can afford, that it'll be low cost and therefore available to everyone. Turbine engines are neat. They allow the military to do things that I would never be able to do for any price is reasonable. So cost is the big consideration for us.
Yes. And what about that insurance? Anybody looked into that?
Well, we're working on that. Actually, Ed is involved in that as well because he's familiar with a lot of the aviation businesses out there. We can get insurance is reasonable if you work from the beginning with the insurance company. If you come in later on, then they worry about existing liabilities. As long as they're aware and they work with you from the beginning, it seems to work out very well. There is insurance for a lot of experimental aircraft in America right now, provided by the EAA, that's the Experimental Aircraft Association, and other ones. So, yes, we'll be covered. Everyone who flies in this will have insurance just like you do for your car.
Great. Sign me up.
We will.
The insurance is actually one of the things that in looking for insurance event that the official first flight, actually that's the reason behind the Indiegogo campaign is to actually do an official first flight in with everybody there, everybody who has contributed to the Indiegogo campaign. So part of that included we have to have insurance for the event. But it's odd. In the very beginning, people will say, "Oh no, we'd never do something like that. We're never going to, insure an aircraft that has never flown before." And I always have to back them up and say, "No, you don't understand. It actually has flown. It's even flown without a pilot on board." And of course, they kind of back off a second. And they say, "Well, without a pilot," and then I have to explain to them, "Yeah, it's highly automated. It's meant to do that, and it's been tested, not just once or twice. It's flown many times in many different." The technology is actually flown, and all of a sudden then it's, well, that's a different story. Why didn't you say that in the very beginning? And, a lot of people especially realize at first it sounds like a really risky thing or something that's, oh my gosh, first flight. Then you realize, oh, he's been doing this for years, and Dr. Mahler's also flown it before. So it's really not. There's very little risk here at all.
Gentlemen, we have gone through 2 hours in the blink of an eye. I got to tell you, Dr. Mahler, you are a true visionary, and just with men like Ed Dorais behind you, I tell you, you're bringing these childhood dreams, I mean, real dreams of substance to reality, and I just commend and applaud you both.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate the support of all those people out there that have been with us. I get a lot of, one of the things that kept me going, people ask me, how did I manage to stay focused on this for so many years? But with the kind of support I've had in the mail and through email today over the years, that's helped a lot. That really has been a contributing factor.
Well, I look forward to meeting you both in person on the big day, you know what I mean?
I look forward to seeing you too, John, and having you fly with us.
Excellent. Thank you both, gentlemen.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Well, you heard it, and you'll hear more.